This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Welcome back to the Law Bites podcast and my annual year in review. This has been perhaps the least predictable digital policy year in recent memory. In fact, even when the predictable happened, the cancellation of the digital services tax, for example, how it happened did not go to script. Now, the reason for much of this boils down to one word, Trump. His election, combative approach to Canada, and the reverberations it created in our politics and policies were tough to predict. It was just a year ago that the Conservative Party was riding high in the polls. Justin Trudeau was facing pressure with the Chrystia Freeland resignation. A month later, Trudeau was gone and Trump was here. A month or two after that, Mark Carney was the Liberal leader, and by the spring, the prime minister. Things moved quickly, and what was building on multiple fronts were suddenly undone. Now, much the same can be said for digital policy. So what happened of note over the past year? Let's talk a bit about some of the bigger picture trends, starting first with the shift away from Trudeau-era digital policies. Now, you see this happening on a whole range of fronts. Digital services taxes, of course, the most prominent example of that, the DST was on. Then Donald Trump said that trade negotiations would come to a close if Canada moved ahead with the DST. And so in the span of about a week to 10 days, Canada said it was moving ahead with the DST with potentially billions in stake since it was being applied on a retroactive basis, to deciding that it was going to walk away from the DST altogether. And in fact, that was confirmed this fall with a budget that included the formal reversal of the DST. But it's not just the DST. We've got two other internet regulation bills, both Bill C-11 and C-18, that over the course of the year faced increasing pressure, and we now have reports that they have been part of the discussions about the efforts to renegotiate CUSMA, or at least negotiate some sort of deal with the United States on tariff-related issues. Now, in the case of Bill C-11, that's, of course, now the Online Streaming Act, we saw over the course of the year efforts primarily at the CRTC to address issues with respect to streaming. They identified what they saw as base contributions from the streaming companies. They held hearings that focused on the meaning of Canadian content and the further contributions those streaming companies will be required to undertake. Now, much of this remains somewhat in limbo. We've seen the question around base contributions appeal to the federal courts, and we're still waiting a decision on that. CRTC did produce its decision on the meaning of CanCon, which itself may face some sort of pushback, potentially through the courts or some appellate mechanism. And we are still waiting on the CRTC to fill in the remaining blanks with respect to the contributions from the streaming services. In fact, interestingly, Quebec decided it wasn't really prepared to wait any longer, and it passed Bill 109, introduced and passed all in the same year. It's legislation that looks a lot like the Bill C-11, a lot like the Online Streaming Act, but in some ways goes even further, including quota requirements for French language content. That legislation is sure to face some sort of challenge should the government seek to fully enforce it. Now, on the Bill C-18 front, the Online News Act front, we did see the first $100 million come in from Google, and much of that was distributed through a new collective designed specifically for that issue. But at the same time, blocked news links on Meta properties like Facebook and Instagram remain in place. That's been the case now for more than 2.5 years. And I think it's fair to say that Prime Minister Carney is less a fan of this legislation. And if there was the prospect of striking a bigger deal with bigger economic impacts in Canada, the possibility that they might walk away from the Streaming Act and the News Act, I think, remains a very real possibility. The other area where we saw a shift away from Trudeau-era digital policies was artificial intelligence. The government's priority with respect to AI now, I think, is pretty clear. It's about adoption and competition, or at least the competitiveness of Canada with respect to AI over regulation. Now, this represents a huge change. It was just 1 year ago that we had Bill C-27, that was the combined privacy and AI bill. of course, doesn't ultimately pass, but the government's made it clear it is not bringing back that legislation in the same form. We should see, and we'll talk a bit about privacy in a couple of moments, we should see a privacy bill introduced probably early in 2026, but there is not going to be an equivalent AI bill, at least nothing that's even close to what C27 involved, and C27 itself was fairly bare bones. It was modeled by and large on the EU approach to AI regulation, the EU AI Act, but with even Europe beginning to move away somewhat from its initial approach with respect to AI regulation, seemingly just about everybody now sees this through a more competition-focused lens and is concerned about the possibility that AI regulation may create barriers to adoption and the competitiveness of various companies. And so the general interest or the general priority, it seems, for many is to how to ensure that you're competitive. And I think that's precisely what we're seeing play out in Canada. Second big trend that's worthy of attention, I think, focuses on privacy. And on that front, I don't think the news is particularly good. As I alluded to just a moment ago, Bill C-27, which was the bill designed to address both privacy reform and AI reform, died when the government prorogated early in 2025. And of course, we had the election, and the new government has yet to bring forward an updated privacy bill. The responsible minister this time is going to be Evan Solomon. He is the AI and Digital Innovation Minister, and he has said that he will be the lead on privacy legislation. That's a change, given that privacy is ostensibly the responsibility of the industry minister, currently Melanie Joly. The fact that the government's decided to use the AI minister as the focal point for privacy may send a bit of a signal that that will be the focal point of this legislation. And I think it will raise some questions as to whether or not the government's plans for privacy reform will be as comprehensive as some, I think, were hoping for. In any event, Bill C-27 died, and so we are still waiting for the updated privacy bill, one to update the longstanding private sector privacy law that we have in Canada, PIPEDA, that is now 25 years old. But that doesn't mean the government wasn't active on privacy. Arguably, the government was very active on privacy, just not in the way many would have hoped. I think the most important activity that we saw was with respect to Bill C-2, ostensibly a bill dealing with various border measures, but buried within it, parts 14 and 15, was the return of lawful access. I devoted multiple episodes of this podcast to the implications of those lawful access provisions. And it does seem that as the public became aware that a bill that was supposedly about the border and even dealing with things like fentanyl actually had enormous privacy implications through lawful access, the government seemed to step back. They introduced a second bill, Bill C-12, which included all of those border measure provisions, but then excluded the lawful access provisions, the parts 14 and 15. So lawful access seemed to be either done or at least put on a different track. As we head to the end of the year, I think we know that it is on a second track, but it's not dead by any means. Indeed, there have been efforts behind the scenes to develop new compromise legislation, and we've even seen any number of Liberal cabinet ministers and members of parliament talk about the need to move ahead with lawful access, claiming that any delays are the responsibility of the opposition. It's obviously far more complicated than that. I mean, that's a political spin on a policy reality where there has been considerable opposition from a wide range of different stakeholders for the government plans. But nevertheless, lawful access, whether as C-2 or perhaps even more likely as some new standalone bill, seems likely to return in 2026. That wasn't the only bill the government introduced, though, that has privacy implications. There was also Bill C-4. That was ostensibly a bill dealing with various tax-related measures. It was designed, supposedly by the government, as an affordability measures bill, and yet buried at the very end were provisions dealing with political party privacy. It's an issue that I've also dealt with over the course of the year on this podcast. The government really didn't want to talk about those provisions really at all. The committee hearings devoted about 30 seconds total to that issue. They did not extend invitations to anyone at committee who wanted to talk about the privacy implications of basically exempting Canada's federal political parties from the kinds of privacy obligations that are by now standard for anyone in the private sector. It's a case of do as I say, not as I do when it comes to privacy for Canada's political parties. That bill towards the very end of the year, Bill C-4, passed through the House of Commons. It has been sent to the Senate, where study will begin in February, and remains to be seen whether the Senate will at least give the privacy elements of that bill some attention, unlike what we saw in the House. There is also Bill C-8, that is the return of what was earlier Bill C-26 in a prior parliament. It's ostensibly a cybersecurity bill, but there are privacy implications there. And there are even provisions that deal with the question of data mobility in Bill C-15, which is the budget implementation bill. So we've seen a lot of privacy-related issues in different pieces of legislation, though not specifically an update to Canada's overall private sector privacy law. Worth noting that there were also several very important privacy rulings that we saw took place over the past year. The Office of the Privacy Commissioner of Canada was very active with two of the biggest tech companies, one TikTok, with a decision that the federal commissioner came out with in conjunction with several provincial commissioners. I certainly have written about that decision and had some real concerns about some of the elements that the commissioners introduced in terms of effectively requiring increased surveillance for the purposes of trying to ensure that kids are protected on that platform. There was also a Google decision involving the right to be forgotten or right to delete search results that came from the Privacy Commissioner's office. That's been an ongoing decision that has played out over several years now and is likely to continue to play out. It's not done yet. We also had a decision from the courts that examined the issue of Facebook and Cambridge Analytica. Also, talk about longstanding. We're talking about nearly now 10 years of these decisions, and that Facebook case is headed to the Supreme Court, granted leave. And so in 2026, we will see the Facebook Cambridge Analytica case heard before the Supreme Court of Canada. Now, the third big trend that we've seen has to do with digital sovereignty. That's really been the watchword, I think, with respect to digital policy, certainly in Canada, but in many other countries as well. The focus has tended to be on infrastructure when it comes to digital sovereignty, the notion that the way that you address potential risks or concerns associated with the digital environment and who has control is to ensure that you've got domestic infrastructure, compute power, and the like, that is within Canada and not subject to foreign controls. Now, I've argued that this overstates the case. There is value certainly in Canadian-based infrastructure, but that much of digital sovereignty is more fundamentally a question around the law, particularly around privacy and data governance. In fact, in a recent piece in the Globe and Mail, I wrote the following: the focus on infrastructure spending as a key catalyst for addressing digital sovereignty risks is misplaced and unlikely to safeguard against lost autonomy and control. The appeal of investing billions in government-supported digital infrastructure with the promise of sovereign AI is easy to see. Companies line up to get their share of public funding for capital investment that they would have likely made anyway. Governments invariably find it easier to cut checks than usher complex legislation through Parliament, and the public can visualize tangible technology infrastructure situated on Canadian soil. And there are certainly benefits to fostering a more competitive market with homegrown cloud provider alternatives, but the reality is that the location of infrastructure provides little assurance that domestic law and policy will apply to Canadian data, or that the risks of foreign influence over network activities will be significantly reduced. Now, where does all of this leave us with respect to digital sovereignty? We are certainly going to see more spending, government providing support for some of that infrastructure. But whether it will prioritize the issues around data governance, the issues around privacy, which of course could be that privacy bill, which, as I've argued, I think are really the key elements in trying to create frameworks that establish some semblance of digital sovereignty, I think remains open to question. What is also open to question is the extent to which we will see other groups continue to try to use the digital sovereignty framing to advance some of their own policy issues. For example, copyright in AI has now at times been raised as an element of digital sovereignty. The AI minister, Evan Solomon, towards the very end of the year, told the committee that this wasn't his area, that this was going to be a heritage issue. Yet, of course, for anyone that's followed copyright over the last couple of decades, you know that copyright's a shared responsibility, not with the AI minister in any other department, but rather between the industry minister and the heritage minister. It's not clear if Solomon was signaling yet another change in the government's approach with heritage in the lead, or if he simply misspoke and was thinking about the role heritage plays without also thinking about the industry role. Nevertheless, there unquestionably will be efforts to try to bring in new copyright-related reforms framed largely on the basis of what we see taking place with respect to AI. And so this will be discussed as a digital sovereignty matter, even though the implications here extend far, far beyond just AI. Now, speaking of AI, the fourth, I think, major trend that we saw is with respect to AI and the courts. There has been a growing amount of litigation with respect to AI. We've got a lawsuit, for example, against OpenAI that's being launched by some of the larger media companies in Canada. The starting point for that case looked at the question of jurisdiction, whether Canadian courts could apply jurisdiction. Court said that they could. That decision is currently being appealed. That doesn't come as a particularly big surprise either, that the starting point was to argue that there was no jurisdiction, nor that the courts were willing to say that they had jurisdiction. But once the jurisdictional elements of this case play themselves out, we will see, I think, some of the other core elements, particularly around copyright-related issues in these AI services, perhaps addressed for the first fundamental time in Canadian courts. There's also an ongoing case involving Canley, the Canadian Legal Information Institute, which of course is the major source for Canadian legal materials online, which itself has launched a lawsuit against another AI company known as Caseway AI. We'll have to see how that plays out. We've had any number of class action lawsuits that have been filed. Those mirror by and large what we see in some other jurisdictions. And there have been any number of cases before the courts where lawyers have relied upon AI and at times presented courts in briefings with hallucinated cases, cases that simply don't exist, but yet are included in those briefings. This has happened certainly more than once, happened a number of times this year in reported cases. You can see judges themselves meeting out increasingly large penalties for lawyers that fail to do the appropriate work in these kinds of cases and instead rely to their detriment in this case on AI services. Finally, with respect to AI, there is, and I mentioned it a few moments ago, the prospect of copyright itself, and at a minimum, the question of who is going to lead if the government does decide to move ahead with respect to copyright and copyright reform. Now, fifth, there's the issue around internet harms, which was certainly a big issue over the past year. Talked about how some legislation is dead, like Bill C-27 and Bill C-26. Also dead is Bill C-63, which, of course, was the online harms bill that I devoted quite a lot of time to when it was first introduced. It doesn't feel at this stage like this is a top government priority. You know, towards the very end of last year, the government tried to salvage the legislation by saying that they would split Bill C-63 in two parts. There would be the part dealing with the responsibility and liability of internet providers, a duty to act responsibly. And then there were the elements dealing with both the Criminal Code and the Human Rights Act. They said would have a separate track. The bill itself died altogether with prorogation. And we've heard some discussions around these issues, certainly from the Justice Minister. There seems to be a sense that if this legislation does come back, and if you were to bet, you'd bet that we would see something in 2026, it will come back as a much more narrowly tailored piece of legislation, focusing primarily on harms and specifically harms to kids. So that internet harm legislation, no longer the sort of a focal point of the government in the way that it once was. Another harms-related issue, which did resurface in 2025, is Bill S-209. That's the former Bill S-210, which is the bill coming out of the Senate dealing with age verification. The bill itself is once again promoted by Senator Julie Mouville-Dechaine, and it once again appears to have sufficient support in the Senate to get through the Senate. And the big question in 2026 will be whether or not age verification has the necessary support at the political level within the House of Commons. The government has pretty consistently opposed this particular bill. Now, what took place in 2025 is that bill went through various hearings. I appeared before the Senate committee that was studying it. But just as the bill was about to hit clause by clause review and then ultimately presumably get voted out of committee and for a full vote in the Senate, it apparently hit some snag. It's believed to be a snag with respect to some witness testimony. And so the bill itself has been effectively on hold for several months now. Presumably that will get sorted out at some point in time. And once it does, we will see get it voted out of the Senate and then presumably sent to the House itself, where I must say we don't really have a strong sense of where it goes. But finally, the last trend, if it's really a trend, but nevertheless is something worth paying attention to, is the budget. And the budget, not necessarily with respect to the tax measure issues or some of the other economic related elements, but the extent to which the budget itself included a significant number of digital-related policies. Because I think what that does is give us a much better sense of where some of this current government's priorities lie. So if we look back at this past year in Bill C-15, as well as the budget itself, we saw, and I made brief reference to it, data mobility-related provisions. And so that's specifically designed to facilitate the use of personal data with respect to financial institutions or being able to move between different financial institutions, including some of the new digital-related players. There is also, the government says, going to be a block on data scraping. Now, data scraping is used by many of those services in an attempt to circumvent restrictions at times in gaining the data they need to offer up certain kinds of digital financial services. The block could, in theory, be larger than that, though. Data scraping is used for any number of different purposes, and it is notable to see the government say that it is going to try to create some restrictions specifically around data scraping. You do find some of those provisions in Bill C-15. Also in C-15, you see provisions related to stablecoins. Now, crypto is back in the sense that there has been a considerable amount of emphasis in the United States on crypto, as President Trump is a supporter. And the real emphasis from a legislative perspective over the last year was with respect to stablecoins. We addressed that issue in a prior Law Bites podcast. The government has now introduced legislation that would seek to, by and large, mirror what we've seen in the United States, essentially create a legal framework around stablecoins. And we'll no doubt see that play out in 2026. There is a smaller copyright-related issue. I addressed it in just literally the very last episode of the Law Bites podcast, and that speaks specifically to the artist's resale right. Now, that was referenced in the budget, the government recommitting to bringing in a specific provision around artists' resale rights. This speaks to visual artists and the ability to obtain some amount of royalties on resales of their work years later. That earlier Law Bites podcast episode that I referenced sought to highlight some of the risks or problems that may arise in that context. Now, there were no copyright-related provisions in the first attempt to implement the budget in C-15, and so whether this will be a standalone bill or come forward as part of some future omnibus piece of legislation remains to be seen. So we don't quite know yet how this will move forward, but we do know the government has recommitted to doing it. Now, finally, there is the issue of trade. This was, of course, percolating in the background throughout the year. We saw it notably with the United States and Canada's decision to, as we talked about earlier, reverse on the digital services tax. There have been some reports that both the streaming bill and the news bill, as I mentioned, might be on the table as part of trade negotiations as well. Canada is active in having trade negotiations now with many other countries as it seeks to diversify the kinds of agreements that it has globally. I think that if you want to think about what the U.S. is likely to demand from Canada when it comes to future negotiations and trade, specifically around digital and IP-related issues, it's worthwhile looking at the agreements that the U.S. has already concluded. There are two. one with Cambodia, the other with Malaysia. Both provide basically the full wish list that the U.S. has when it comes to digital and IP-related issues. On many of those issues, Canada and the United States are already in the same space. We've already made the changes the U.S. is looking for, or part of broader trade agreements that have addressed some of these issues, but not always. And so, as we say, percolating behind things like digital services taxes and internet regulation is the question of whether or not Canada will maintain some of the approaches that we saw put into place in 2024 and 2025, or whether trade will upset that apple cart, so to speak, and we'll see some further changes. So all this to say, very active, unpredictable year in 2025. We saw such major changes at the political level, which clearly had significant implications for the digital policy world. And the continuation of those changes is undoubtedly going to play out in 2026. I look forward to talking about many of those issues on this podcast in the year ahead. But for now, wishing all listeners a very happy new year, happy holidays, and look forward to seeing you in 2026.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbitespod, or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca, or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo Lebron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose Lebron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.